This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
What a great day of bowling, man. I've been sitting home working all day, sitting in front of this computer, and now I get to spend another 2 hours in front of this computer. Hopefully we don't go into that.
No, we ain't doing 2 hours tonight. I hate to disappoint the people off the bat. I'm sorry. It's been a long week. I'm exhausted. I got grades due tomorrow. Zero chance we're going 2 hours.
Well, the U.S. Open right now is in full swing right now. They're in the games 8 of 8 right now, approaching the first 8 of block. And let's talk Bill O'Neill. Holy crap. Real quick. What Bill's doing right now, he snuck in, barely snuck in to the first cut. And then he went on a crazy rampage in the middle of that block. He went like 797 in the middle of that block on this pattern, which was crazy, unreal. And now he's literally 7-0. He hasn't lost. He just bowled another 279. And I mean, they're starting to make them look easy, and they are not easy. I mean, it's just crazy how good these guys are.
I told everyone last week when we had him on, get on the Bill O'Neill for Player of the Year bandwagon right now.
Listen,
I got bad news for you people that didn't get on. It's closed.
It's officially closed.
Okay.
Close it out, people already.
I told you to get on. I gave you all fair warning. If you weren't on prior to 2 minutes ago, you ain't getting on. Okay? Because Big Mike is guarding the door. All right? And I am not letting anybody else on. You're too late. You ain't getting on when he's making a run at the lead of the U.S. Open for the second major show back-to-back. You ain't getting on. I'm sorry. Okay? So...
I do think a lot of people are on his wagon, man. I don't really know
Is there any player more deserving of a Player of the Year award that doesn't have one?
It's a good question. I don't know that I don't have the stats in front of me of the bowlers who have not won a Player of the Year. I'd have to look and see.
The reflection from the light is gone. Tobias, I didn't do anything. I swear to God.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm watching right now, Game 8. I'll give people the stats or the updates when we're live here if you're not watching or if you're kind of listening, doing something else. But right now, Mike, we were just talking prior to going on air. Imagine if it's the tournament ended right now. Tell the people what the top 5 step ladder would be if the tournament ended right now. You're on mute, Mike. Wait, you're on mute again. Was this your first time? What is he doing?
I wasn't on mute the first time. My bad. Sorry. Top 5 stepladder right now would be EJ Tackett versus Belmo in the first match. Winner gets Troop. Winner gets O'Neill. Winner gets Simonson. Shut it down right now. Just shut it down and let's start the show tomorrow. Did Pete never won a Player of the Year, right? I didn't want to say it because it's almost unbelievable, but I'm pretty sure Kevin is correct that Pete never won a Player of the Year. So, I don't know. Some people would argue, and I don't know if I want to catch the heat for saying this. Some people might argue Bill's more deserving, but I don't know. You know, that's a tough argument when you're talking about Pete.
I wouldn't make that up. I wouldn't make that argument.
And well, the argument, let's be clear, let's be clear that the argument would have less to do with resume and more to do with,
I know what you're saying,
perception by the public. Right. I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, so give me a second.
That's interesting.
So yeah, I mean, I my point is this: I think Bill is very deserving. I think Bill is very deserving of a Player of the Year award if that's the way the season goes. But yeah, listen, I mean, amazing. You know how we feel about watching him. So, and we can bet. And we can bet on every game. I haven't put any, but I mean, we both put future bets in for the week, and we'll talk about those later. But I didn't bet on anything throughout match play tonight just because I was busy. Tomorrow night, I'll be home for the last block. So I'll definitely be getting a little bankroll together on Bet Rivers tomorrow night and looking at the matches and putting in some parlays.
If you would have been on the Bill train tonight,
you'd be 7-0 so far.
I know. And you know how I rolled a 7-0 after my first bet win. You know you're pressing that bet. And then you know you're pressing again. It's like on the roulette wheel. When you keep hitting on the number, you got to keep doubling up. Eventually, you're just going to be like, he's, you know, if he goes 8-0, you could just keep rolling and pressing that bet. But
anyways. I wonder what the odds would have paid on an 8-leg parlay of Bill winning every match.
Yeah, that's
right. 8-leg parlay, yeah. Bill winning every one of his matches. I mean, this betting on bowling thing is crazy because there's just so much action. And like, I really have to pick and choose what I want to do. And I feel like as Bet Rivers offers more options of what you can do, I need to go back and change my menu of what I like to bet on. Because, you know, I'd much rather bet on the matches while I'm watching than bet on, than put, you know, invest all the money that I put in the futures, right? Or I'd rather try and bet on the matches and make some money to then parlay it to the show rather than bet on the futures on the long shots, you know? So, yeah, interesting. I can say this. I will absolutely, for that last block tomorrow, for that last block tomorrow night, I will have some bets locked in, no question.
Real quick before, I know you bowled a tournament this week. I want to get into it real quick before we bring on Mark, who's still not logged in yet. Does anybody know what bowl Bill O'Neill's throwing tonight? Because I can't tell, and it looks like a theorem, but I'm not sure. Sometimes our people in our chat are on top of this stuff. So if anybody knows what Bill's throwing tonight, I'd be really interested because the ball's reacting very great right now. And all right, Bill. I know, Mike. I know you bowl a little bit this weekend. I was reading your tweets. Sure if you went league, but theorem, huh? He is using a theorem. I knew it. It looks great out of his hand right now. All right, Mike. Real quick.
Bowl
pain
terribly.
Depression.
They were as tough as advertised. They were as tough as advertised. Hooking middles with a ton of volume up front, seven right kind of out of bounds, even if you were trying to play up it. And yeah, they were definitely tough as advertised. I didn't score well. I don't feel like anybody really scored that well, but I definitely didn't score well. But it was one of those situations where I didn't score well, but I didn't feel like I bowled all that badly. Like, my spare shooting was pretty good. The first game I came out, I used a phase two, just trying to control it. Shot 197. Go to the next pair. I opened two out of the first three frames with splits going light. Realized the phase two is no good. I used four different balls. I get to an IQ tour late in the game, throw the last four. 160, so no good. But I'm still in it because I know the cut's going to be 50 under, 60 under probably. So I'm like, okay, I'm still in it. Go to the next pair, start with the IQ I just finished with. No good. Open two out of the first three frames again. End up using two or three balls that game. End up in a different ball at the end of that game. Go to the next pair. Things are pretty similar. Use the same ball for the whole game. Shot 190, 188, I think. No, 2-0 that game. Last game, That ball stopped looking good. Went back to the IQ. That looked a little bit better. 188 the last game. So like minus -110 for five. The cut was minus -50.
You know what I love about Mike's reviews is when I do a review, I say, yeah, I bowled shitty. I was minus -110. When you ask Mike a review, it's like you get the play by play on what ball he used, what he switched, well, where he played. What?
I'm like, shit.
I bought 120 under. I don't even want to talk about it. I suck. That's how my.
Yeah. Well, for I mean, listen. The cut. There were 140 people at this event, and the cut and the cut was minus -50. You know, so I think that speaks to how hard they were. It only took 190 to make the cut, and I really got very lost for about 12 frames, and I felt at the end of the day, if I could have gotten those 12 frames back and had an idea of what to do. I my score would have probably been a lot better than it was. But, yeah, I mean, listen, like, even given all that, I mean, I think it goes without saying that my execution wasn't that good, you know. And on top of that, it was kind of a battle of the podcast, I'm not going to lie, because Johnny Jr. was there. He was bowling as well, and he bowled phenomenally and led the event, I think, through day one. Was he first or second? I think he might have been second. But both phenomenally, nonetheless. Which was I think a little bit plus. I think he was about plus +40 or something like that. But I obviously lost the battle of the podcast there, so that was disappointing,
Mike,
as well.
We're gonna have to fly out to Jersey to represent.
I know, but here was the good news. I won the 50-50. I won the 50-50. Okay, so I wasn't walking out of there broke, bro. I was walking out of there with some scratch in my pocket.
That reminds me of like you bowl a tat and then you win the mystery score and you leave there and you're up 1,000. But you know what? Where I think you should visit, it sounds like, Mike, you've been struggling. You should make a visit to Mark Baker or markbakerbowling.com. Sounds like you might need some virtual lessons from the greatest, best coach in the whole world. And I could personally vouch for him. Who's in our back room right now, probably waiting to give you some shit about how bad Mike's been bowling lately. Mark,
very entertaining, very entertaining. I love it. I mean, you guys have such a better way of describing how you bowl than we did back in the 80s. I mean, we only had four answers. How'd you bowl? I bowled pretty good. That means you finished in the top 10. How'd you bowl? I bowled all right, 11th through 24th. How'd you bowl? I stole a check. 25th through 33rd, 53rd. How'd you bowl? I bowled like shit. I got to go practice. No check. That was the extent of the entire thing. No ball, no matching up, no transition, no urethane, no lefty. We just, those are the four answers. All right, much better at this.
If you want
I love your terms.
If you want me to simplify it, my answer choice would be D, bowled like shit and need to go practice. So, yeah, that's the simple version.
There we go. We're all on the same page when that answer is given. We all get that one. We've all been there too many times.
Funny thing is, too, I went to the training center the previous Friday, and I did the Friday before. It was the day before, and I did practice, and I threw pretty good. I felt very confident. I got done practicing. I was like, "All right, man, I'm going to go in and bowl good tomorrow." And yeah, they were for me, a lot of it's just decision making. I know this sounds ridiculous, and people who know me are going to absolutely laugh at me for saying this, but I feel like if I had a ball rep behind me. If I had someone who could tell me, here's where you're throwing it, and this is the ball you need to use, it would be lights out, bro. It would be lights out. Because when I find it, my execution is 10 out of 10. But when I don't have it, my execution gets terrible because I feel like I don't have it and I have no clue what I'm trying to do. I know, Rob. Go ahead, Rob.
I love it. He wants someone to tell him what to do while he's bowling. I mean, where are we in the sport at this point when he wants someone to sit back there and tell him where to play, where to stand, and what ball he is?
But that, I mean, I would imagine I don't bowl on tour anymore, obviously, but I would imagine some of that does go on. Those tour reps are pretty talented dudes.
They are.
I'm glad you said it. I'm glad you said it because he'd laugh at me if I said it, but I was just going to say, what are you telling me that there's not guys on tour who have that kind of, relationship?
It's another
going
set
on?
Of eyes. So, Big Mike, what you're talking about is you're standing in the approach and you don't feel comfortable. So, if you don't feel comfortable in your stance, the odds of you being consistent go just you have no chance and there's no confidence. So then there's absolutely no consistency. So that's why when you bowl good, you just you're so relaxed in your stance. So if that other set of eyes confirmed or is like, hey, you're seeing it wrong, move here and go to this ball, and the first shot did what you wanted, your shoulders would relax. So I hear what you're saying. Those two reps definitely have their guys they work with, and what those guys have done, they've built up trust. So you need another set of eyes you trust to confirm or deny what you feel. So I think there's a real art to being a tour rep. I would not want that job. I think that's a long, hard job. Because only one guy's happy every week. Bottom line, one guy's happy. The rest of them are bad about something.
Very true.
Mark, let me ask you on this point. Do you think if there was more money in bowling, like if the pros were, let's just say, making like, you know, millions, that you would have been hired to travel on tour?
Oh, of course. You watch all the best golfers. They got their guys there. Oh, yeah. That's like I said, it's another set of eyes. I like how golf does it where I don't think the coaches are allowed on the course with their players. But I mean, when you watch them putt or on the range, and you know what those good guys do, I think, is they calm them down. They get them in the right frame of mind. And then you're talking the best in the world, whether it's bowling or golf or tennis. All you got to do is let them go and they get the right vibe going. They're going to do just fine. I would imagine if the money was the same, because then you would have a contract, you get X percentage of their earnings. So then it's, you know, hey, by the way, I'm going to be out there this week. This is the U.S. Open. You got your stable of, say, five guys. And that's kind of what they do. I would imagine if first place was a million this week, yeah, the picture would look different.
See, Mike, no that's question. What you need. You need a ball rep. You need, like, Sean Ryan, and you need Mark Baker behind you telling you.
So you don't need both. You just need Sean. You don't need me. I'm not a guy at the tournament. I'm a guy you come work with. I'm 2-3 hours of you understanding you. So when that situation arises, all right, I got this. But not – you don't want to coach during the tournament. You don't want to be breaking your game down while you bowl. You just want to bowl. Sean Ryan would be much better at that than I am.
I always ask Mark if he would be able to give five-minute lessons, because Mark would fix my swing in 5 minutes, and then I would just strike for 55 minutes of the 60.
But why? Because I knew your game like the back of my hand. You did. So you would throw two shots, and I'm like, okay, that's not right. I know what it's supposed to mean. There's a – anybody I work with very long, it's just a video plays in my head. Like, hey, I know what he looks like when he bowls good. That's not right. Oh, I know what it is. The man bun's in the wrong place. Let's move that man bun. Remember, you were the man bun king there for a while?
I was. No, I hated that.
I knew
that.
Your game so well that if it didn't look right, I knew where to – okay, the ball's not doing this. I knew where to look pretty quick. That's because I knew your game. Once I have that video loop in my head of what it looks like when it's right, it's not very – it doesn't take me very long to fix it.
And how many of those games would you say you know on the tour right now that are bowling?
Now, probably not very many. Because, you know, I used to know at one time I had, you know, Billy O and Barnes and Tommy and Fagan and Mika pretty dialed in. I was, you know, but I really didn't do much. I mean, I had a couple times out there at the World Series in Vegas, and Tommy was always the easiest. Chris liked to do the most talking. Chris liked to talk about it between every shot. Mika didn't like to say much. Billy was cool. He wanted me to just keep walking. No matter how Bill was bowling, just keep walking, because if you stop, I think I'm throwing it bad. So he would do that. Fagan and I got along very well. Fagan was too smart to be a bowler. He was really smart. He's a smart dude.
Yeah, that's why he's not bowling anymore.
Yeah, but he was really, you know, that was a different guy. So he was very good. Meek, I had good runs with all those guys. So, yeah, but that really isn't what I don't think my strength would be, especially when it's all about the shape and the release. I mean, I can help with that, but these guys know those balls so well, and it really does matter how they're seeing that picture. There's just no two ways about it, especially like what I've been watching a little bit of the U.S. Open. Whew, that's an ugly picture. That just looks like torture. All right, even when my old guys say how tough they were back in the day, we never bowled on them. Well, the 1 year we bowled on that, we bowled an Arena Bowl 84 in Chicago. They were this hard the whole week, and Roth just ran everybody over. Mark just gave us all an ass whipping.
All right, enough about our nonsense and our games and our poor bowling. Let's talk some serious bowling here. So People are familiar. I think most people in our chat and most people that listen to this podcast will be familiar. You've been on the show before. That previously you published a book called The Game Changer, right?
13 years ago.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what was the date on that? Because the years go 13. By. So 13 years ago. Wow. I got to be honest. It seems like 5 years ago to me, maybe.
Not so, to me, it doesn't.
Okay. All right. So you published the book, The Game Changer, and in that book, I had it. I still have it. And in that book, you laid out, I guess I would say you laid out the common fundamentals that some of the greatest of all time have in common with their games. Mm-hmm. And you were identifying a set of key points that you felt and you had analyzed. All of these players had these key points in common, right? Very, very interesting theory, very interesting stuff to read. Very heavy on instruction and how you could apply it to your own game. And we brought you on tonight because you're back. You're back 13 years later, and you're not, I'm not going to say publishing, you're putting out some new coaching information. So give our fans, give our listeners, give the people in the chat a rundown of what your new project is, and give us some info on it.
Right. So I came up with two. I really wanted to do a two-handed video because big part of my growing in my business is the kids. And so I would say 50% of the kids that are bowling now are almost two-handed. And the two-handed people that I met, the two-handed people that I came across all complained about there's nothing really for us. I did some two-handed camps. Their parents were very, wow, you're the first one to really do something for two-handers, you know, like this, or you brought these pros in. So I thought they needed a video of their own. And so obviously I got, you know, beyond fortunate to get the two models I did. But I thought if I'm doing a two-handed video, I need to do like an update to my book. And then I did a DVD about 3 years after that with Tommy and Chris and Linda Barnes and Barry Asher. I need to update my way of seeing it. And a lot of it was predicated on where I coach. I coach at the Westpac Training Center. And so my view is different because I get every shot on camera and on Specto, but my camera's from the front. So it changed the way I see bowling. And in the book and the DVD, I spent very little or no time on the release. A lot of the one-handed is talking specifically about how to create that, you know, that what I call the first feel. When you throw it good, immediately off your hand, it feels good. Then if you get to the right spot on the lane at 45 feet, it looks like somebody kicked it, that's the second feel. So that whole premise of my video is like, how do you create the first one and where do you create the second one from? Because every bowler wants two things. I want to be more consistent and I want to throw more strikes. Let's just get down to the chase. So I came up with some new markers and some new terms in these videos where I try to help as many. I did a 6-minute video free for seniors. Nobody does anything for seniors, but they're 30% of my business. They're retired and they got money and they got time. My favorite customer. So I thought they deserve something. So I brought Dave Houston in. I'm 62, Dave 63. So we came up with the do's and don'ts for seniors. Then I had a one-hand instructional video. And then the two-hand instructional video, I got Jason Belmonte and Anthony Simonson. So I got, you know, basically I got Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. I got the two best who ever lived at it. And so I show you how completely different they are, but I also show you their records in majors are so good. Why? So I did a bunch of investigating. I watched hours and hours and hours of their videos, and I came up with how they're so accurate because they actually do the same thing the last three steps. They're almost identical. So that's kind of what I came up with, two different ways of doing it. So
identical to each other.
From the front, overlapping. Okay. Their third steps, where their swings go, everything. I didn't know that. I just like, whoa, because Jason has that very unique third step. And then I'm filming Anthony, and then I'm like, wait a second, these are like exactly the same. And then their pivot steps, where they go and how their left shoulder clears their right hip and their swing plane. And I draw lines on the back of my where my charts are, and their heads don't move. And like Belmonte has a line between his eyes and the line never moves for three steps. Like, well, that's why he's accurate. His head never moves lateral. Then I put Anthony and went, oh, one's like 2 inches farther than the other one, and one's playing 20 and one's playing 18. And I got the Specto numbers to back up, like, oh, these guys are super accurate. They don't get credit for how accurate they are. They all see the rev rate and the power and the speed. When we did all the testing, Anthony and Jason were by far the most accurate. Not to say Prather, Danielle, and Houston weren't really accurate. But Jason got on a little bit of a roll and was like, as Husted put it, I'm just happy I don't make a living against these two guys now. That's how impressive they were the 2 days they were here.
Yeah, that, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I watch a lot of bowling, but that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I say that all the time about Belmonte. People say, oh, the two-handers, oh, they have all the, and I say, no, if that's what you think, you really, you ain't watching. because this guy is out there repeating it yep. to a level which most people are not capable of. You know, when he's on, people can't repeat it at that level. And Simonson, I mean, I know he's two-handed, but does anyone, I don't know, maybe people do, but I don't look at Simonson and think, oh, unbelievable, remarkable, earth-shattering power. I really don't. I mean, he's two-handed. He's got a nice two-handed game, but I really look at him.
So what does he do different than everybody else?
I feel like it's the repetition and the accuracy, but I also feel that it's the consistent way that the ball comes off his hand.
So how does he do that? That's what I'm. I mean, in the video, I prove it.
Okay.
So I call it a new term. I call it moving the air forward.
Okay.
There's only three ways you can move the air. You can move the air up, you can move the air down, or you can move the air forward. Simonson moves the air forward longer than anybody I've ever seen. So his window is the longest on the bottom of his swing. So that's why he has the most releases. His window is the longest.
The window.
I know all about the window.
So, yeah. So when I did it, you know, and he was – and we did it kind of organically. If you watch the video, I do this thing called the Baker Box I can't even come up with and how I play lanes. I never let any of the bowlers watch anybody else bowl. So my training center, two lanes. So when Jason bowled first, nobody else is in here but Jason. He gave me 20 shots. All right, Jason, you're out. Then Simo came in. Where'd he play? I'm not telling you. What ball he used? Not telling you. Just bowl. He bowled. And then Danielle and then Prather, then Husted. So I never told anybody where to play. I never told them which ball to use. I gave one job. There's tape on the lane at 45 feet. Throw it through the tape and split the 8-9. And they all played the lane different. And they all played it through different equipment. And they all obviously throw it different. But they threw like, you know, I show like a 15-bagger in my video where they split the 8-9 every shot. And all they have in common is that one spot down lane. So they never even watch each other bowl. I just did it. I don't want you guys to have any information from the other guy. Just walk in, warm up, and bowl. And so they were all on those 2 days. It was impressive. It was a lot of fun. A lot of work, a lot of fun.
The question I want to ask is, any commonalities that you see between the two-handed game and the one-handed game?
The only difference, I measure timing when your slide foot gets flat in front of your head. My book was big about that.
Right.
So on the two-hander, the difference is I measure their left arm. So if you took all five of them.
When the left arm comes off?
No, the left arm is flat. When your slide foot's flat in front of your head, their left arm needs to be parallel to the ground.
Okay.
So I'd say 95% of the two-handers I coach are all early, which is pretty wild. All the two-handers are early. I've never coached a two-hander yet that's late. So they have this giant rev rate, all this, rotate, how they make it hook it, and they tend to lack ball speed. Why? Because they're early, so they tend to get on their left leg too soon, and they're using their right shoulder as a power source. That causes their hand to go to the outside, and you get too much of this, and the pros have a lot more of this because Simonson and Jason's timing spots were exactly the same.
Okay.
Real quick, I want to throw to the chat. If you guys have any questions for Mark, we want to do a little bit of a Q&A. I know Mark has a lot of bowling, obviously, knowledge, especially with helping bowlers of all levels, not just the high-level bowlers. I see Mark working with beginners, and you know, whoever needs it can come to Mark. So if you have any questions about maybe your own game or how to get better or just in general, throw them in the chat and then we'll see if we can get them answered.
I mean, one of the things that you used to be very well known for, I was going to say famous for, but very well known for, was like you had open clinics, didn't you, for a long time at a bowling center in California? Cool,
the only reason I'm not doing it is the training center fell into my lap, how we worked this out. And so my Saturdays are 8-9 hours every Saturday. So, you know, I really wish I was over there with Barry. Barry and I do, he's doing the clinic still at Fountain Bowl every Saturday, 12:15 to 2 o'clock. I think he charges only $20. We did it for 12, 13 years together. We ran, we averaged about 1,500 bowlers a year for 12 straight years. We ran a lot of bowlers through there. So some got coaching, some just wanted to practice. A lot of them, like, you know, Brooklyn Rob there, he just got abused by me. When he was there, you have to ask, nobody enjoyed the clinic more than me. I was terrible to people. Oh, I was terrible. And they couldn't get enough of it. It was some of the most fun coaching I've ever had. And Barry and I are, you know, almost best friends or one of my best friends in the world. So we had a blast. So that was going on. But I don't really make a living coaching pros. I mean, when you coach the pros, it's a blast because they're so unbelievably talented. They can actually do, hey, AJ, do this. And then two shots later, he does it. Hey, Tommy, I want you to I want you to slide on the wrong foot. All right, Bakes, I don't think that's going to work, but I'll give it a shot. Tommy Jones will throw a double for you. It's crazy. So, Mark, those are a blast to work with, but I make my living, you know, 160 to 215. That's where I do most of my coaching. And lately, it's been more and more and more new bowlers. I'm not sure if it's a California thing, but the amount of people who are now getting into bowling and they love it as much as we do is just, for whatever reason, maybe it's being on Fox all the time. I don't know what the answer is, but bowling is very much more. My 20-30% of my business now are people that have bowled less than 2 years. So I think that's the greatest thing ever. So I got this whole new group of people, and they can't get enough. And there's so much on the internet, so much on, you know, YouTube and all that. So that stuff makes my living fun because some of that information's not the not the best.
I don't know if you've heard or not, but we have a segment around here called Worst of the Week.
Yeah, I mean, they bring them all in. I watch them. I'm not sure how that works. I mean,
just for that reason, when we started this podcast, one of the first things I said to Rob is, I said, Rob, there's so much nonsense out there on the internet for bowling. We gotta do a Worst of the Week and highlight some of this nonsense, bro.
There's a couple I've seen recently. Like, I guess that stuff works if the pins were at the dots. Having your ball rev up 500 in the first 10 feet might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, here's the difference at the training center. So I bought this Baker box thing. Here's something cool. Where do bowlers watch their ball motion from? The foul line.
Yeah, the arrow. Arrow's out.
I go down to the pin deck and watch you bowl. I'm standing at the curtain by the pins. Because I had a couple dads tell me, oh, my son throws a ball slow. I'm like, your son's throwing at 16 miles an hour. Yeah, that's super slow. I'm like, have you ever come down to the pins and watched what 16 miles an hour look like? So they came down where I am at the pins. I said, tell you what, you reach out with your hand and you stop the ball on the lane, I'll give you a free lesson. No problem. Well, the ball comes whistling down there 17 miles an hour. It's smoking. So I started, wait a minute. I started deciding, hey, I need to find a way to teach how to play the lanes, not from the bowler's point of view, because everybody sees a lane different. The whole reason I came up with the Baker box, that's from the pins point of view. How do the pins fall? Now, Strike Seeker, I get to watch the pins fall every day. I see what strikes look like, and I see what – I only do two things for a living. I watch you strike, and I watch you miss. I know why both happen. Because I gave 2,500 lessons in 2 years here at 50 shots a lesson. You do the math. That's 100,000 shots I watched. I'm not guessing. The pins sit exactly the same in every bowling center in the world. They want to get hit from a very specific angle, regardless of the ball, the pattern, or the rev rate, or the tilt. The pins are just pins. They're inanimate objects. So I started watching from the pins point of view. How do you make the pocket bigger? So I thought, well, the best release in history of our sport is E.J. Tackett. I always thought it was Don Johnson, Amleto, Holman, and Tommy Jones. That was my Mount Rushmore of best four releases. This kid Tackett, he's not really a kid anymore, but this Tackett release is unworldly how good it is. So where does his ball tend to break from? The same kind of the same zone no matter what he bowls on. And if you watch the pins from where E.J.'s ball hits, Jason Belmonte's ball's there a lot too, they make the 1-3 the widest. That's all it is. So how can I teach bowlers, even though you don't throw it like those guys, if I can get your ball to hook from, say, 5.6 at 44 feet, your entry angle of the pins makes the pocket the widest. So that's kind of the difference here. I tend to watch from the pins. How do the pins react to everything else? Not because as you throw it as a bowler, you're watching from the foul line, the ball's going away from you. The pins, the ball's coming at you. It's a completely different view.
Okay. Talk to us about the training center. Like, where is it? How did you get involved with it? What's your relationship with it? Tell us what are the facilities like? Tell us about it.
Oh, it's just it's amazing. It's a it's in Orange, California. It's right across the not across the street. It's kitty corner from the Anaheim Stadium. It's one exit from the pond, right off 57 freeway. A lot of freeways, kind of the 557, the 91, the 22, and the 405 are all somewhere around here. So it's a great location for me. The owner, a guy named Lee Haxton, it's Western Pacific Bowling Supply. He sells all the capital equipment behind the walls where I work. He had built a place, an AMF lane is one, and a Brunswick machine is on lane two. He built a Dream Mechanics back in the day, 20 years ago. Thing, you know, obviously the constriction of bowling centers, not as much work. Call me in during the pandemic. I did not realize he had a two-lane private center. Took us about a year to figure it out how to make it work. We brought in Specto, brought in Strike Seeker, all that good stuff. And now it's just a cool place. It's a little two-lane private deal. You know, I'm basically, I'm qualified to be a pin chaser. I'm not real good mechanics. If the five things that break I can fix, we're good. If that six thing breaks, then lessons are over. So, and I'm okay in the Brunswick machine, the AF machine, AMF machine. I go back there. I don't know what I'm doing. I just hit a button and hope it works. Okay. So that's how it started. It was a COVID thing. We came out of COVID. I started doing it in the beginning of 2022, and the bowlers love it. They get strike seeker. You see every shot. Specto, you get to measure the numbers. You can walk around anywhere you want and look at things. But more importantly, there's no music and there's nobody walking up on you. So a typical lesson, you bowl 3 to 3.5 games. Here, you bowl 5.5 to 6. So there's a lot more shots being thrown, a lot more data. So people just really, really like the privacy of it.
Okay. Mm. Not open to the public, though, if I'm understanding.
Yeah. Well, no, you just can't write. Yeah, if I'm not here, it doesn't work.
Okay.
They run a completely separate business on the other side of that wall, and I stay out of their way as best I can.
Okay. Because out here, I'm in Jersey, and not too long ago, Parker opened up a part of another bowling center.
Oh, it's really nice. That's the real deal there.
Yeah, so I'm there a lot, and I practice there, and I can't say enough about that environment.
Yep.
of just going to a place that's meant for real bowlers to practice. I mean, I'm sure along your years of coaching, you've got to have some good stories about walking into bowling centers and, you know, running into various situations of birthday parties and groups that are there while you're trying to give a lesson, or cosmic bowling happening while you're trying to give a lesson. So, again, to have a training center and to have a place dedicated to, you know, real bowling training is a new experience for me. We don't have these all over the place, obviously, but yeah, great experience nonetheless. I know Rob too in Arizona. They have B3, right?
So he. Yep.
So yeah, I mean,
Mike Calderon and his crew over there. They do a great job. So. It lets you know the bowlers that are a little more serious. And the thing that's amazing, like today, one of my guys was a lady I coached today. Her daughter goes to school at Orange Lutheran High School down the street. She's only been doing it for like 3 months. Took a half hour lesson. She's like, put me down every Thursday, the next four Thursdays. This is, I can see myself bowl. This makes way more sense than, you know, typically the guys in league trying to give you their tips, which make my living easy, because their tips, they're not that they're bad tips. They're just telling them tips that work for them. They're never addressing the issue she had. So I said, well, it's this, this, and this. Well, they tell me I'm like, well, they're wrong. Try this. She went, oh my God, I've never been in balance ever. I've never hit a target. Like, oh, this is, you don't have to have it. I'm like, no, you don't need to have the yo-yo release at 3 months into it and you're averaging 92. Oh, I thought I had to get my elbow to pop my wrist. I'm like, how about hitting the pin that's closest to you? The pin that's closest, let's hit that one twice in a row. So bowlers that are pretty new to the game, she goes, I'm just never taking lessons here, only here. This place is amazing. People like seeing themselves bowl. So what happened as a coach was, invariably when I'd film Rob at a lesson at Fountain, I would film 3 or 4 or 5 shots an hour. Well, here, every single shot's being thrown. So instead of me telling you what not to do, let's say, you know, Rob's skill said he throws 10 shots, 6 or 7 he likes. So we can figure out the markers of the 6 that really work. Like, instead of not doing this over here, let's just do these 2 or 3 things every time. Because when you do those 2 or 3 things, then you get the result you want. So it's changed how I see coaching quite a bit, because I get to see not only the bad shot, I get to see the good shots. So when you see that 3 or 4 shots, we're like, okay, now we know the things that you do that give you the results that you want.
Out there, Mike. Mark, when my hand heals up, I'm gonna drive out, or my bicep. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rob's injured right now. He's on the bench. Uh-oh. You mentioned Specto. You also mentioned another system. What was the name?
Strike Seeker.
Okay. What is that? I haven't heard of it.
Strike Seeker it's out of Arlington, Texas. And I get the view. I only bought the beginner package or the bronze package. So I get the big picture of the bowler coming at me.
Okay.
I get the picture of the ball going down lane with the tracer. Then I get a picture of the ball going through the pins in slow motion. Then I get another picture of just your release. And it has a little bit of data, but I use all the data. Specto's data is top-notch. Specto's top-notch on the numbers. Like, my engineers and my IT guys, they want to see numbers and that ball path. So I have like 2 different sets of tech that really open up, and everybody kind of sees it different. So Strike Seeker is good, because I can put a flash drive in. You throw 40, 50 shots. You get done. I give you the flash drive. Every shot's on there. So
No, I was going to say I want to get into some questions real quick to shoot fire questions.
Sure, fire away.
I just want to know real quick with Strikesy, what like how does it do that? Does it does it come with a camera or use your phone?
You mount two cameras. One is there. They are there. So you mount one camera just in front of the foul line, and one camera just past the arrows.
Okay.
You put my two screens right there. One's going to have Specto, and one has a Strike Seeker, and those are my BakerBox board, my BakerBox charts, and my lane machine that tends to work pretty good as long as I just keep out of my way. I'm a terrible mechanic. I have no skills. I pray every day it works.
It's like the training center of a mad scientist.
I like it.
It really is. This is so much fun. I can sit there and, especially when the guys that are good come in, you guys' skill set, when you guys start striking, I can watch balls go through the pins by the hour and just be enamored with it. And the only thing I come up with, I cannot give you a real answer why they're solid eights. I watched 200,000 balls go through the pins. Solid eights are the most unlucky thing that ever happened. The head pin and the five pin both missed the eight pin by like a 32nd of an inch. And if there's no rhyme or reason, it's in the right spot, the core lays down in the right place, the ball splits the 8-9, and you leave a solid eight. But how to leave ring in tens and not leave ring in tens. And like when somebody throws a really good strike, what's the last pin to fall? When you throw it pure, what pin falls last?
Nine. That's a
good question. That is a very good question. The last pin to fall, a 10? The 10 pin?
The head pin.
The head pin.
Oh, it's just perfect. Your ball paralyzes the head pin when you split the 8-9. So the way I look at it, there's like two triangles. So the head pin hits the 2-4-7, just goes like that. The 3-6-10 domino. So now your ball is getting ready to hit the 5 and the 8-9 are at one triangle, and the head pin's still standing there. Your ball runs over those three, and then the last thing to fall down is the head pin. Like when Belmonte had it going, it was like, is that the way it's supposed to work? I'm like, well, it works for him. We just kept watching it. So I've been watching it since I filmed those guys, and like invariably, if your rev rate's over 350 and you throw it really good and you hit flush, the head pin's the last to fall. That's our training center. People dig that. Oh, my head pin fell last. I did something right. So I kind of made it up, like everything I do.
That's a big caveat, 350 rev rate. I don't know. It's a big caveat right there.
Yeah.
The Specto thing.
Huh. That's funny. I like
all that. All right, Rob, go ahead. Questions.
You want to talk about rev rate? Here's one for you. So what happens when your rev rate goes, say you're Rob, they'll use Rob. Rev rate's 4 to 1/4. Is that right?
I mean, you know, good shots 550, but you know.
Yeah. No, okay, but here's the deal. So Specto, I get every shot, right? I get every rev rate. So say your rev rate's 4 1/4.
Okay.
What two numbers are the important ones?
In Specto?
No, in rev rate. 425 is your number. What two numbers are the ones that matter?
The four. The
first two.
The 25. How good your spread. It's not about how big the front number is, it's how tight your spread is. Because if your rev rate's 425 and you throw one at 460, what does your ball do?
Something completely different, I would imagine.
Wash out every time.
It washes out. The higher rev rate. Hook.
When your rev rate goes up, it doesn't hook. When your rev rate goes down, it hooks too much.
I know nothing about bowling.
My Specto numbers. I brought the best bowlers in the world in here, and that's what happens. So the numbers, why is Tackett so good? It's not because of the 5 in the front. It's because the spread's so tight. I get that strike challenge, 510, 510, 509, 508. Because his spread's so tight, that maximizes the front number. His spread's 10. That 5 is huge now. But if you're 550, 50, 480, your ball's going somewhere different, so that front number's not doing you any good. So I've had the most strikes ever thrown in here have been guys that are right between 360 and 380 besides the pros. And they get that thing 375, 375, 375. It just hooks in the exact same spot. And as soon as they hit 400, it's a two pin or a flat 10 or a washout every time.
Interesting. Yeah.
If they throw spare balls at it, the rev rate goes through the roof. That's why it's always a little suspect. You see guys on TV throw the 10 pin, the rev rate goes to 550 instead of being 450. So there's a little bit of, when it goes straighter. So when the rev rate goes up, the ball tends to go straighter here. It doesn't overhook like everybody thinks. Oh, I caught all that one. Yeah, you left the two. Like my son, he's a two-handed kid. 420 to 440 hits a pocket. As soon as he hits 470, washout or two pin every time.
Hmm.
And if he hits 405 or 390, it's going away, Brooklyn, because it slows down so much earlier.
All right, I'm going to do some quick fire questions here. I'm afraid to ask this first question because I always wondered about this. What is your opinion of the USBC coaching? Andrew V has a chance or wants to think about doing the bronze class. Is it
worth it? You pick up more knowledge is good. I've done everything. I mean, all I do is study stuff. I mean, gotcha. I study mainly John Wooden, but I mean, Coach K, I really study that guy from University of Connecticut with the girls basketball team. Legit dude right there. So I tend to study other coaches and other professions to see how they go about doing it. Anytime you can pick up information, it's never going to, I mean, if you came to take lessons for me as a coach, I'm not 100% right. I know how to function for me, and I know how to get the best out of you my way. But that's not to say somebody else has a system that's as good or better than mine. I just know what works for me. I'm really good at listening. Bowlers, I think bowlers don't get credit enough for knowing their own games. Bowlers are unbelievably good at explaining why they miss. Most bowlers cannot tell me what they're good at. Almost every bowler can tell me exactly what they're bad at. And if you listen, they're pretty much right. Okay, that I see what you're saying. I do a lot of virtual lessons, and that's, you know, what is your miss? I miss here because of my timing or my balance or my release. I start watching videos like, man, that's 100% correct. Your self-analysis is perfect. Let's work on this. So, I mean, every coach is a little different. So if you get knowledge and it makes you understand something you didn't do, go do it. I don't really think about stuff like that much. I work too much.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to Mike Miss every week. I mean, he talks about his league, and I listen to him how bad he is every week. So I know exactly what you're talking about there.
I've taken the bronze coaching class, and yeah, I mean, if you want a good introductory level class about how to teach the very basics and fundamentals of bowling, I would say take it. I would say it's worth your time. Mark, okay, you mentioned the virtual lessons there. Bring up another question here. Sarah asks, I'm curious how effective you think virtual lessons are. I've been debating it with not a lot of coaches in my area and have only had lessons in person.
I'm doing right now around 1,200 lessons a year, just giving lessons, and I do another 300 to 400 virtual lessons. And the people that take the virtual lessons tend to take a lot of them. I mean, one of the guys on the East Coast has taken his fair share. Probably the most is Anthony Pepe. He's taken a ton of them, and we have a great time. And it's really, it's virtual lessons. It's always good to get another set of eyes and break it down a little bit different. Obviously, I see it different than every other coach because every coach sees it different. So I think, you know, I see it a little different. I have my definite markers I look at. So, you know, if you can't get, that's kind of how this works when, like, what I do for a living. Like the video, her question should be answered by buying the video. I'm not trying to hustle you to buy a video. Well, I am, but anyways, buy the video because then you'll know how I coach. You're going to get, I'm intense. I talk fast. I'm pretty loud, but I'm in. I'm 100%. I'm 62 and a half or 63 almost. This is just a normal day. 7 lessons. I'm wound up. That's how I go about it. So if you saw my video, like, wow, I think what he sees it is good. Then the virtual lesson would make 100% sense. Or the people live in Southern California, or they fly out to the training center, which happens a lot. Then I'm your guy. The first thing about a coach isn't who's the best coach. Is this the coach for me? That's what people should be asking, not who the best coach is. Do I buy into that person's style? I'm intense. If you're back off and I'm a big guy in person, like, you talk too fast, you're too loud, you're in too tense, I may not be your guy, but hey, this guy's all in. He never guesses. He knows what he's talking about. Then I might be your guy. So I would think the video would tell you whether or not I'm the guy to take virtual lessons from.
All right, another online lesson question. For an online session, how many shots and what camera angles do you use?
I want never more than 5 shots because my IT guy won't he won't do it. So on my website, if you click on virtual lessons, I tell you not only where to stand, I tell you how to hold your camera, and I tell you what the frame rate should be on the speed of the camera. There's 3 distinct spots I want shots from, and I would love to see if people send 5, I want 2 or 3 good ones, and I want 2 or 3 ones that's my miss. And once I can see that, it's pretty easy.
Okay.
Anyway. So I have a question I want to pull real quick here from Roger.
Go ahead.
If I can't afford a lesson, or I'm broke, whatever it is, and I need to try to teach myself in a sense, what do you would recommend? Drills? Would you recommend, like, what would you like give a hint to somebody at home that's maybe listening that wants to get better but can't afford maybe a lesson?
How am I going to say this and not sound like I'm from Brooklyn?
If they can't afford a lesson, then they shouldn't buy.
I do not believe in drills.
You don't? I was going to say that. See, that's because I've never seen you give drills. I see them all the time.
I have people come here and do all the drills. I'm not okay. Here, I'll take a swing at one. I mean, this will make me not the least favorite coach in the world. So when somebody throws a bowling ball, I cut them in half. Every shot you throw, there's 100% effort. John Wooden said that. John Wooden's still the best coach. So if 100% effort on every shot, whether you throw it good or bad, it has to add to 100. Then the next part, I cut you in half. So 70-30 rule, 70% lower body, 30% upper body. That's the sign of a good shot. The easiest way to explain it would be your training center guy. Mr. Parker Bone has lived at 90-10 his entire life. That's why last time he fell off was 1986 when he was a rookie on tour. I don't think Parker's fallen off since then. Because it's 90% lower body, 10% arm. Look at our Parker's guns. Not a tricep, not a forearm, no bicep. Parker is not. Parker doesn't have no pipes. Pete Weber, probably the second best, 95.5. So if that's a real thing, if they're lower body centric, and the best shots are always 70-30, because once that upper number gets to 51%, that denotes you threw it. If it's 70-30, you rolled it. Then you have a chance for accuracy, balance, and a consistent release. Once you're upper body centric, you can't hit a target and you have a very inconsistent release. So 51-49 is bad. So I say 70-30 is my rule. 80-20 is what I'm looking for. The pros are 90-10. So now let's go to drills. What's the most common drill taught? The no-step drill. How much percentage of your legs are using that when you clear your back leg? You put the ball on the ground and you swing it with your shoulder and you pipe it. How much lower body is involved in that ratio?
Zero.
So it's 100% upper body. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I don't care. We didn't do drills when I bowled. We just bowled our asses off. So you want to have a good release? Do the 10,000 hours like I did coaching. You'll become a pretty good bowler. You put 10,000 hours in of your regular shot. So that drill teaches you to create instinct and feel out of your shoulder. When you throw the ball good, the ball swings off your shoulder. So I don't dislike drills because I'm trying to be antisocial. I'm just saying how I coach and what I teach, that drill would not fit with how I see the game.
So, I mean, more succinctly, your advice would probably be get out and practice a lot, get out and bowl a lot.
So I watch people do the drills and then I watch them throw the ball, and the drill and the ball have nothing in common. You know, I'm going to get in so much trouble for this. The drill's been going on for 70 years. They just took it out of the pro shop and they put it on the lane. Get your ball drill. You stand in the pro shop at Barry's shop at Barry Asher shop in Fountain Bowl, real narrow. Barry stands over there, Barry's in the back, you're by the door, roll it to me. So the guy keeps his head up, ball's on his hand, chin's on top of his kneecap, swings nice and smooth. Whoa, that came off nice. I caught all that one. Look, it's hooking in the carpet. That's why I can't go in the pro shop. They do that four or five times. I've never had a ball fit this snug and come off so good. This is the greatest thing ever. Then they go out and bowl for 5 minutes. What happens? They come back in the pro shop, make the thumb bigger. Why? Now they're not doing that drill. Their head's in front of their kneecap, their shoulders leading it, and their thumbs in front of their fingers, and the son of a bitch won't come off. So I don't believe in it. And
then they're going to league, and then Patch Pirates are giving him tips. And then that's
I get it. Everybody does it. I see it like by the thousands. So maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I'm just saying, if you want to teach instinct and you want to get your right leg as the power source, not your right shoulder. Or else if that was the case, all the guys my size would be the best bowlers in the world. And nobody my size is the best bowler in the world. They're all skinny dudes. They're all 5'9", 180, 150. That's how you should be built, like Parker. Pete, that's how you should look.
It's bad news to me. I was doomed from the start in this sport.
Same here. I should have stayed at that damn jump shot. I should have played baseball.
Yeah, I should have stayed as an offensive lineman. I was doomed
Where we ended up. Being a bowler. Please don't anybody take this the wrong way. I don't teach drills because I don't like the math. It's just math to me. Lining up is just geometry. I'm a numbers guy. I just like the math of the 70-30 because everybody time that does it, oh my God, my balance is so good. That felt so easy. When it feels easy, it never means the arm. That means your arm did what it's supposed to. It's a swing. It creates accuracy.
Another question from Kevin here. Yeah, any tips from Mark on how to get the most out of his videos? Any pitfalls to avoid when trying to take in his coaching video and apply it on the lanes?
Good question.
You know, that's a very good question. So coaching isn't me telling you what to do. Coaching is me trying to help you do what you can do. So that's one of the things, like in the senior, I made that free for the seniors, the five do's and don'ts for seniors. Don't try to get lower. Don't try to throw it harder. Don't try to increase your rev rate. Don't try to, you know, all these things that people do with the senior, like Father Time's undefeated. You can't do those things. Stand up closer to the foul line, decrease your knee bend, add loft and turn it later, and your ball will be perceived as faster and you'll have balance and accuracy. So it's not so much to do. So when you watch my videos, you got to video yourself. Look at the markers. If you're one-handed, you look at the markers of Prather and Husted and Danielle, and they have the same markers. I mean, Prather and Husted, it looks like Prather is trying to become Husted. I didn't know. They never met each other. And I started to be like, they're almost exactly the same guy. So Prather, you know, picked a good guy to look like, because Husted still looks like $1 million and he doesn't bowl. So when you're like watching my video, look at the markers and then film yourself. Am I in these positions? Because invariably, if you get in those certain positions, a timing spot, you move the air forward, you add the rotation second, you'll notice like your balance will get better and your release will get more consistent. And the Baker box will teach you how to play the lanes. You'll knock down more pins. If it didn't work, I would have been out of business a long time ago. That's one way to look at it. If my restaurant had bad food, they'd have closed my restaurant.
We got one last question and then we're going to get you out of here. Appreciate all the time you're spending with us.
Oh, no problem. You said an hour and a half. We got another half hour. Let's go. Dude, once I'm wound up, what am I going to do? Calm down now? I'm in. This is my wheelhouse here.
Kevin wants to know, you worked with Frankie over the summer. Any specifics you can give us about things you guys worked on?
Just Frankie's field. What a talented young man that is. That is very smart, very talented. Just trying to get it. The pros are very their feel is so touchy. They're so good at it that you're just trying to get him in position so they can feel it. Because once they, like, he threw like 5 or 10, we worked on this, and then he went, oh, I'm good, let me bowl. So I was here with one of his friends, and he just bowled for the next half hour, and it was like, your mouth is like, he can hit 5-5 at 45 feet, like, every ball. It was impressive. So a guy like that, you're really working within the frame of what they want. I need to feel this. So my idea is, for my job as a coach, when you work with the pros, is you're not going to change their game much. You're just going to get them to understand what creates their feel. Because when they're on, they're not thinking about nothing. When they're bowling good, they just throw it. So when they're throwing it bad, what happens? They think about it too much. So you got to kind of pare it down to find that one thing that really makes sense to them so they can repeat the shots and then just get the hell out of the way. And I don't ever teach them how to play lanes. I mean, they all know how to play lanes. I very rarely talk about any of that with the pros. They just, if they can repeat, they'll figure it out.
Uh-oh, you got support from us, from a lovely young lady.
The nice Perzad. I gave her a lesson. She was top notch.
The best Perzad, right?
I immediately posted that. I've given lessons to all of them now. The boys are 2, 3, and 4 at best. You guys can fight over the order. I know who number one is.
Mom started bowling, you know. She started to get the rhythm again. I saw a video. I might have to send it to you to get
it was great. I gave her a lesson at Fountain.
Yeah, Mark has given every lesson except for my dad. My dad quit a long time ago. He was the smart
one. I met your dad.
I know, but he's the only one that hasn't taken a lesson.
There you go.
I think all of us have taken lessons except for my dad.
He's been a good run.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a good run. Last question here from JP. Should knee bend start at the pivot step?
The knee bend, so that's when you get to the timing spot, your hips should drop. I'm a big believer in staying pretty tall in the beginning of your stance. I think, you know, when you start an approach, it's kind of like walking across the street. When the light turns green, you don't drop your hips. You don't bend your knees. You walk. So as you walk by it and your swing goes up and you get ready to slide, your hips should drop once and then stay level through the rest of the approach. That way it's easier to just drop them once, and it's easier to move the air forward if they drop one time. They tend to drop on when the ball starts just downswinging. You're in the timing spot. So your ball's up here and your hips drop. So then you stay level, and that's what makes you have a flat spot. Your hips have to drop and stay level, or you can't create a flat spot.
Flat spot. Remember that, people. You have anything to take out of this whole, the flat spot. If you don't know what the flat spot is, buy Mark's book. He talks about
that. I don't really talk about it there. I mean, I'm just saying, I know that's the key they use. I just call moving it the air forward. So when you move the air forward, it bottoms out everything. I mean, your shoulder stays stable, so it bottoms out your swing. Chris Prather is very, very good at that.
I'll tell you,
his game is so good. His game is so good, it's disgusting.
As a bowler's perspective, who's taken multiple lessons with Mark, the one really key thing that I got out of Mark's lessons is how much leg work and footwork there is in bowling and how much you bowl with your bottom half instead of your upper half.
I think
and
so.
You don't realize that until you start focusing on your footwork and your legs. And I remember I was the best time I've ever thrown the ball is when I started taking boxing. And boxing was teaching my pivoting and was teaching
right. you how to throw punches, right? How to generate yes. power out of your lower body up through your core.
Correct.
Sports are sports. And
all of a sudden, my bowling game was like, I was winning everything. And I wasn't going to bowling lanes to practice. I was going to the boxing ring to literally box. And it was amazing.
Who was the bowler that made that, not so much boxing, but who was the bowler that proved that more than anybody else? Amleto. Amleto got in better shape than anybody who's ever bowled. He was fanatical. I mean, the amount of running and all that, jump right. roping and stretching and all the things that Amleto did, I think it mentally put him at a spot that I'm in better shape than everybody on tour. And then when it comes down to the last eight games, he just ran us all over. I mean, he was the first person that took getting in shape to the next level in bowling in my era. A lot of us were in shape. We were bowling shape. We were jocks that played other sports. He got in shape on tour, and he stayed in shape, and I think he's still in amazing shape. So Amleto was really, really good. He did what you're talking about. His lower body was everything. Amleto's not muscle-bound. He's kind of small, but he didn't exactly miss it on the bottom, and his legs were underneath him. I mean, think about his rev rate and all the angles he could play and all the tricks with his hand. What was the same thing? His lower body was solid every single time. So, yeah, I think you're 100% correct. I'm a big believer in footwork. I'm a big believer that your lower body controls your swing. And so the better your footwork, the better your balance, the easier it is to have a straight swing.
And the larger your flat spot is.
All right, let's get you out of here on this because we have about a half hour left, but we have to talk about other stuff like people getting locked up at professional bowling tournaments today, but whatever. Let's
wow. go over
there. But wow. let's get
you out of here. All those old boys are talking to each other. We can't – none of us can – supposedly Parker said something happened in a regional, but like – a lot of us have been playing phone tag today going, I don't know about that one. I mean,
Mark,
I saw some crazy shit happen on tour.
I was going to ask you, has anybody got arrested yeah. mid-squad at a tournament yeah. in the tour in the 80s?
Oh, we're off the rails.
I don't remember that ever. I don't remember. And I feel horrendous that it happened. Yeah. Brandon was, he was on my team on the PBA league. Bowled great for me. I just feel terrible.
Yeah, he was bowling good too. He was 78 old when he got arrested.
Yeah. All right, we'll put that right over here.
Yeah,
we'll
want
right
to
here for right now. Here's what I want to ask. Because I feel like you came on to promote the video, right? And the video's for sale. So tell people a few things. Number one, where can they get it? How do they get access to it? Number two, and I know you don't want to give everything away, but can you describe for us a little bit if people purchase it? What are they getting? What are they going to be seeing inside the video that they can apply to their game?
Sure. So if you go to my website, markbakerbowling.com, and you just click on the Games Changed video series logo, it'll take you to Vimeo. You buy it through Vimeo. Make sure when you go on Vimeo, you scroll down. The Vimeo display, it says $150. The video is not $150. It's $150 if you buy the one-handed or the two-handed. But because of their display and the way people look at it on their phone, scroll down. It'll say one-handed. It'll say two-handed. Obviously, you buy it for the appropriate amount of arms you use to bowl. What's in it? So the one-handed has Daniel McEwen, Dave Husted, and Chris Prather. I wanted a male. I wanted a female. I wanted a senior. And to show that, basically, I'm trying to show you the markers to create the two feels in bowling. Okay. When it comes off your hand and when it makes that move at 45 feet, how to create that feel and where to create that feel from. So it's about 20 minutes of physical game, and it's about 12, 13 minutes about how lane play works, according to me. The two-handed one, pretty self-explanatory. I brought in the two biggest horses there are. You got Jason Belmonte, and you got Anthony Simonson. So two different styles, the two best two-handers who have ever lived, and they prove it all the time. So I just thought for the two-handed, for people that are two-handed, the biggest growing segment of our sport, they needed something like Jason Belmonte is fundamentally sound. I say that in the video. When you break it down, it's just like, okay, this just looks right. Jason has figured it out for Jason. And the beauty of the video, I never worked with any of these five bowlers. Dave Husted is my best friend. I've never worked on his game in my life. A little bit Danielle, but the rest of them, I just have them bowl. I never said a word to Jason or Anthony Simonson about anything. Just bowl, and I'll do the rest. So you're going to get a real good breakdown of the two-handed, how Jason does it, why Anthony's Anthony, and then you'll see why they both are so accurate and why their records are so good in majors, and they're obviously doing a fairly good job of proving it in this week. So that's what the two differences are. And the lane play section is the same in both. So I wanted one-handers, two-handers, female, senior, all play the lanes the same at 45 feet, a different way of doing it. So that's what you're going to get. The markers to find the two feels and the one-handed, the two-handed finally broken down. So if, you know, the new-handed is a fairly new way of doing it. So if you think about it, say there was no Jack Nicklaus, no Ben Hogan, and no Bobby Jones. It would just be Tiger Woods. It would just be Tiger Woods is the greatest of all time. Well, that's how I see Jason in two-handed. Seven players of the year, 15 majors, 31 titles. You cannot say he's doing it wrong. He is the standard for all two-handers. Here's his fundamentals broken down that you could apply to your game that make you more consistent two-handed. So I thought that that group needed something for that group.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, so listen, you guys heard it here. You heard where to go check it out. You heard where you can go view it. Mike, the knowledge is out there if you want it. Go ahead, Rob.
Before we let Mark go, word on the street is that we wanted to give away something to the fans who are watching. Sure. So what are we giving away, and who are we giving it to? I'm going to leave it up to you. I know there were some good questions in the chat, so maybe we pick someone who had a good question and we give
the them person something. That asked me the lady that asked me about should I take a virtual lesson from you. We'll give it to her.
Sarah Snyder.
Yeah. So that's the winner, and you get Sarah. So you will get. I will send Rob the code tomorrow. I'll get my IT to make you a free code, and then when you go to Vimeo, you'll type that code in, whether it's the one-handed or the two-handed. And you type that code in, and she'll get a free Games Change video series video.
That's amazing. Sarah, reach out to us.
And I will send out. I will send it to Rob. I will send you the code.
Sarah, if you don't reach out in a week, then I am keeping the code for myself, and I will be watching the video.
Got to have that clarifier.
Get out of here.
Sarah Snyder, reach out at SweepTheRack@gmail.com and give us your info, and then I will make the connection. Oh, there she is. At SweepTheRack@gmail.com, reach out, give us your info, and we will hook you up.
That way, so Sarah, she'll get to see how I coach. She'll see the video. You'll see what, hey, I think this what he's saying makes sense. Then a virtual lesson may make sense to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, after you watch the video, book the damn virtual lesson and figure out how to really tackle the challenges that are in the video, no doubt.
That's kind of how that's been in the, you know, the video's been out three weeks today. And my virtual lessons have exploded. I mean, It's triple what I normally do. And almost every one of them, I bought your video. It made sense. Now apply it to my game. And people are really, so they see my style of coaching and they see how I coach. So I think that video is probably your best way to understand if I'm the coach for you before you make an investment, you know, to fly to California for 3 days or that, or, you know, the virtual lessons, if you buy two, it's 150. The video is actually the least expensive thing you can get. And you get to watch it as many times as you want.
I like it. I'm coming there. I'm going to come there once I start bowling again, and I'm booking a whole day with you, Mark. We're going to spend 8 hours. Good. So we'll go do lunch, and we'll fix my swing because I think we're going to need 8 hours.
If you're ever out east here,
you don't go to Jersey East Coast, Mark.
No, Parker reached out to me. Possibly, I mean, Parker reached out about me maybe coming out there and spending a week at his training center and being like the guest coach of the week. And then we would bring in Doug Kent for the weekend. We would do like 2 days of clinics because Doug, that. You know, Doug works all my camps, and that might be one of the best coaches in the country is Doug Kent.
Dude, I know he Doug is, from the
cricket. Doug is one excellent coach. He is Doug's top notch. Doug's a top notch guy. So Doug's a good human, he's been a huge addition to my camp. I think he's been there 10 years. He's just been amazing. And if Parker ever reached out, we might be able to. I know there's the hardcore bowlers are on the East Coast. You guys are crazy. So it's when I go there, I've been to Babylon, and I've been to Port Jeff a couple times. It's always fun to get. There's so many good bowlers of Far East, but you guys just take it so serious. It's just fun how intense you guys are because I'm fairly wound up myself, so I fit in perfect. I don't have the accent, but I'm definitely intense.
If you watch one of the old shows. Yeah, watch some of Mark's old 80s shows when he was on TV.
Those are good shows. You're right, Robert.
I lose both of them. That's the sad part.
When you were talking about that earlier, about you being an intense coach, I was thinking to myself, oh, man, get me and this guy on the lanes together, and we'll be riled up, boy.
Oh, no problem. I'm all in. I'm very fortunate to do what I do for a living. I really do enjoy it. I've been doing this 15 years now, and I don't want to do it. I'm too old to do anything else. I'm sure as hell not a mechanic. So, but I really enjoy it. Yeah, there you go. Please come to Jersey.
Yeah, look, all my people are in here. Like,
begging, yo, I'm telling you.
So you just got to
come out to Rev Race. I'm packing the house, Mark.
You know, figure out the numbers and the how that works. And you come out, you do lessons for four straight days, and then you bring Doug in. They have enough lanes there. We could have, 15 or 20 at a clinic on Saturday or 15 at a clinic on Sunday. We could do a two-day, a day here and a day there with three of us. You know, I think you could pull off a pretty good thing right there. Parker's, what do you say about Parker? He's just a class act. So Parker's great. Doug and I have already worked together a ton, so Doug knows my way. So I would not be averse to if Parker reached out, hey, let's have you be the guest coach for a week in there and see if we can make the finances work. Let my wife sign off.
Well, I'm packing the house with talented hacks. Okay.
Yeah, you guys aren't hacks, though. I mean, it's a different animal.
Oh, we're hacks. We're hacks. Yeah, we just have talent.
Yeah, bring in that. What's that one hack you got? That Alex Cavaniero guy. He can't throw very good.
Not a hack.
He took a lesson. I'm like, so am I paying you or are you paying me? What are we doing here? Okay. Am I just going to watch out with the smoothest guy on the East Coast strike every ball? Yeah, last one, I felt like I got around that one a little early. That's 14 in a row. Keep getting around him a little early, brother.
No doubt.
I grew up with him.
What a good bowler he is that nobody knows about. My God.
I grew up with Alex.
What a good bowler that dude is.
Yeah, I saw him bowl his when he was 11. He bowled those 200-300s in nine days. I was bowling a Friday night team doubles when he did one of those 300s.
So yeah, that was one, like, he showed up a lesson. I'm like, do you fall off much? Nope. I didn't quite catch that one. I'm like, if you say so.
He's been that balanced since he's 12.
I mean, it's impressive. And he doesn't. If you don't live on the East Coast, you may not know who he is.
No.
But like people like me outside, are there any guys that can this guy can bowl a little bit? He's pretty good. So there's a lot of those, East Coast. You guys have a lot of those guys under the radar.
Also, a very good poker player.
I don't doubt that. He didn't show a whole lot of emotion. He'd be pretty hard to read.
No doubt. He's got at least one Borgata Poker Classic trophy to his collection.
There you go. Yeah.
But listen, Mark, thank you for coming on again. Friend of the show. You have an open invite. You know that whenever
you want to. Oh, you guys are the best. I love this stuff. This is great.
We definitely have to have you back at some point this season because we didn't even get into any PBA league tonight. And obviously you're one of the league managers and there's some matches coming up on Saturday. So promise us that before the end of the season, you'll come back and we'll do a little PBA.
You guys just say when. I love this stuff. I love anything to do with bowling, making people better. People love the game. I'm all in.
Okay. All right. Cool. So we will book that with you soon enough. Thank you again for the time. Thanks, guys, check out the new information he's putting out there. Mark Baker Bowling. You guys can go and check it out on your own and get that knowledge, get that information you need. Mark, thank you again, man.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. Bye.
Later. Bye. I need help like that, bro.
Oh, you need a lot of help.
I need more help than that, but I need to, if I'm going to start somewhere, that would be a good starting place.
You know, the crazy thing is I was bowling my whole life, right? Since I was 3 years old. And when I first worked with Mark, it got me like thinking of a like part of my brain that I never used before while I was bowling. And that was the really crazy, like after like one lesson with him, I was just like, holy crap, like I've been doing it wrong this whole time. Like you start thinking like that. But dude, like after like you start thinking like differently about like when you're bowling, like actually when you're bowling, when you're throwing the ball, you're thinking about different things than you normally think about. And all of a sudden your timing just like clicks and you're like, holy crap, I'm like repeating shots and my strings of strikes are longer because I'm making one or two better shots a game than I normally. Like normally, like if you think about during a tournament or a league, whatever, maybe you make, for me personally, I would make like maybe six or seven good shots a game, right? And the other three or four shots, I'm just hoping I'm not really bad that I'm splitting. Like after when your timing starts working and you start doing some really good things, you start making eight, nine, and then all of a sudden you get to these games where you're making good shots every shot, right? The whole game. And this is what these guys, I mean, I watched the US Open all day. And you watch some of these guys like Bill and Simo, they don't make bad shots. And when they do, it's really limited, right? And of course they make really bad shots once in a while, right? Because they're human. But all I'm saying is when you start working with a coach to that level, you start thinking differently. And for him to be accessible to anybody out there, low, like if I'm a golfer, I don't have access to the greatest golf swing coach right now. If I wanted to, I couldn't go on a website and I don't know, maybe Butch Harmon, right, is who was Tiger Woods swing coach. I can't go on a website and get a virtual lesson from Butch Harmon. Maybe I can, but it'll probably cost me thousands of dollars. You got access to the world's, my opinion, greatest coach, and it's not even a lot of money. I mean, it's worth it. Instead of buying a new ball to hack it up with, you got to go get physically right, you know, as well as mentally right, you know. So I think that's where we're biggest, our biggest obstacle in the sport of bowling is today, is more people need to be taking lessons with guys like Mark than buying bowling balls. Honestly, you know what I mean?
No, no question.
Anyway, we got a lot of other things to talk about, Mike. So we appreciate it. This was a great interview. I'm glad we talked through it because we have a lot of U.S. Open to talk about. Where do you want to go, Mike? You want to go through where we are with the qualifying, or you want to get into what everybody wants to talk about, which we're not going to get into so much detail about?
Yeah, I mean, what are we going to say, right? Like, if people think we can come on here and you know, kind of say whatever, and we can't. I mean, we do have to have a certain a level. I know we joke about it sometimes, but we do have to, and we try to have a certain level of responsibility around here. So if you expect us to feel like that. Well, I mean, I understand because there's a lot of topics we get into that don't need it,
right?
Right, but this is certainly not one of those, right? So, it's not something that we want to really deal with, in the way that we like to do things. It's unfortunate, you know. None of us really know many details on it. I mean, a lot of rumors were flying around today, and then here's what I'll say.
Let's talk about what happened first, because not a lot of people maybe know what we're even talking about.
Oh, come on, everybody knows. A bowler got arrested during the cashers round of the U.S. Open.
The U.S. Marshals came in and arrested one of the pros who was actually bowling pretty good, and everyone probably knows already, was Brandon Novak, right during the middle of the squad. And they arrested him right there. And he was 78 over, and he actually didn't even get a chance to shoot his spare, because if you look at his score, it shows 7, and then like he didn't even get a chance to shoot his spare. That's really all we really know at this point. We don't really know specifically what he was arrested for.
No, you know, there's a little bit more information out there. So Jeff Rickles published an article a couple hours back, and in the article, it was really about Simonson leading up to this point in the tournament. Mm-hmm. But in the article, he mentioned Novak being arrested, and he told the story of what happened. And he actually said that he has some background in doing criminal reporting. So he used some of his resources to try and, you know, find out what he was arrested for. And from what he could see, and again, I'm paraphrasing from Jeff's article here. From what he could see, it was a restraining order situation.
Oh.
It was something having to do with a restraining order type situation. Now, again, Jeff was just hypothesizing here, but he was saying that in a lot of restraining order situations, if you're found guilty, you're not allowed to leave the state that you're found guilty in. And Novak was posting, and again, this is all paraphrased from Jeff's article, Novak was posting social media posts tagging himself in Indianapolis publicly on Facebook. So listen, it could have been something like that, you know, and there's always gray area in these situations, right? So it's not for us to get out there and comment on what may be in play here. But, you know, certainly an odd situation for a bowler to get arrested in game two of a cashers round of a major tournament, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate situation.
It is.
I don't think you're going to hear much more about it. You know, you're certainly not going to hear much about it from the USBC. Somebody in the chat just said that they scrubbed games 1 and 2 from all of the different broadcasts that they have on there. So,
No, you summed it up well, Mike. I don't think you'll really hear about it from us too, unless, you know, it happens again during a major, honestly.
Yeah, and really, until you have the details, or until you have more details, I really don't think that there's much to comment on. I mean, Jimmy's in the chat. He said bad look for bowling. I agree. You know, even if it turns out that he's innocent, you know, we're all entitled to the assumption of innocence over guilt. And even if it turns out that he's innocent, it's still a bad look for bowling because people ain't really going to remember that. You know, they're just going to remember a guy getting taken out in handcuffs in game two of the cashers round of the U.S. Open. So,
yeah, dude, I mean, I've watched too many programs in the last 2 weeks on Netflix of innocent people getting locked up and thrown away for a really long time for stuff they didn't do, honestly. So you're right, though. It's, you know, it's an unfortunate incident. I really, you know, that's all we really know is what we just talked about. And I feel like, look, like it's just a bad situation in general for everybody, for him, for bowling. So
yeah, let's not pretend ourselves either. It's not the first time that somebody in the PBA or associated with PBA has gotten in trouble at a tournament. I mean, you know,
I lived in Brooklyn, grew up in Brooklyn. I mean, people would get arrested in the bowling alley all the time. It was pretty much a weekly occurrence. We even had the Secret Service show up one time. Yeah, that was that was a whole nother incident. Gil Hodges Lanes in Brooklyn, man. You never knew what the hell was going on there at any minute. Anyway.
All right. Can we get to the actual tournament? Can we talk a little bit about the actual tournament?
Please. What a stacked five we have right now going into tomorrow's 16 games. The only thing that pisses me off about this whole situation is the fact that I can't get to watch this until tomorrow night, whenever that tomorrow night's last block is. I can't watch it during work or else I probably wouldn't have a job, even though people seem to dream shit all the time where I work. Anthony Simonson's leading right now at plus 944. Mike, not surprised, right? Kyle Troop, who I put a bet in, Mike, plus 2,500 Kyle Troop was. We talked about it last week. When we're going through the odds, I put a bet in on Kyle. Bill O'Neill, we talked a little bit in the beginning of the show, literally snuck in. And I have to recant my statement last week, Mike. I talked about how the eight games shouldn't be bowled. They should just take to the top 24 and give checks. I completely recant that statement because Bill, what he did with that opportunity is he snuck in. Decides that he's going to literally go like 230 over or 240 over the next eight, get himself into a top 10 or 15 going into tonight's eight, and then absolutely runs him over for 7-0, goes 7-1. Now is in third place, Mike. So that's what happens. I mean, you let the door open for these guys who are the best in the world, and they not only knock it down, but they kick it down. Right. And that's what Bill's doing right now. Dude, Bill makes back-to-back major shows. I mean, it's going to be wild seeing for everybody, especially a Sweep the Rack here. So we'll see it. Mike, EJ Tackett 4, Belmonte 5. Okay. Is this the best top five we've seen at a major going into the final day of match play ever? And since we've been like doing this show,
pretty good.
Crazy. EJ pretty also. Good. What seemed like he was a little bit down. Belmonte really didn't have a first 2 days of. I got Belmonte at plus 900. I got Simo at plus 600. I got Kyle Troop at plus 2,500. Mike, five of the six bets that I made are in the top 24. Three of them are in the top five right now. And I still got Spencer Robarge throwing in the middle there with that bet that I made, who's in 23rd right now, who I don't see unless he makes a crazy run. Marshall Kent, 6th. Sam Cooley, 7th. Tom Doherty made an amazing run tonight to 8th. Matt Russo, Tom Smallwood. Mike, Landon Jordan is going to win an award Sunday, regardless, probably from us, from a Sweep the Rack, like, I would say maybe I see you, Haas. I mean, how old is this kid? Do you know how old?
Sure.
Does anybody know how old? He's got to be like, is he even 21? Could he even legally drink?
I don't know.
If anybody knows,
he doesn't look it. He doesn't look it. He
doesn't. But right to be in a
17,
top
17, I mean, somebody's saying. Jesus.
Dude. 16. Someone said 20. Someone said 17, 16. Nobody knows. People throwing darts.
No one knows how old he is.
Right now. I'll take 17 because three people said 17. Mike, this kid's in the top 11, was in the top five. Dude, like.
He was in the top three.
I know. wild. I think he's a product of the Elite Youth Bowling Tour with DeAndra. I believe that he's very active in that, and he grew up with the Elite Bowling Tour that DeAndra runs, that we had her on in an interview. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bowling. But, Mike, I love the U.S. Open, and I always talk about how I love the U.S. Open because the shot, Mike.
And sickening.
How do you know when it's time to quit? How do you, when should you get?
They were so torturous out there this week that I enjoyed watching. I mean, they were that torturous. Like professional bowlers were on the verge of meltdowns. Okay. Absolute meltdowns. All right. You saw professional bowlers doing things you usually don't see.
Young bowls.
Okay. You saw professional bowlers doing things you don't usually normally see them do. Okay. For instance, like seeing a professional bowler go flag the head pin. Okay. Let's be clear. If a professional bowler, I don't even care what the tournament or shot is, I'll be honest with you. If a professional bowler goes flag the head pin, immediately the tournament should stop.
Okay.
Play should stop. Okay. Music should come on. Lights should come on. Okay. And then, like they used to do at the Apollo Theater back in the day, okay, a clown should come out dancing on the approach from the back. A clown should come out, okay, with music playing. And the clown should have a hook with them, okay, a giant cane hook, and he should wrap the hook around that bowler and just pull him off the approach. And you know what? That bowler's done. DNF right on the spot.
So sort of like the gong show used to be, like a big gong, and they used to like get a big hook, right, and hook them.
Yeah, no, that's a really good analogy. That's a really good analogy because
Dougie wants to know what you know about the Apollo, Mike.
Dougie, don't front on me, son. You know me outside of here. So don't even go there, son. Okay? All right. I know I spent many a Friday night watching Showtime at the Apollo. Okay. Don't tell me. But listen, here's my point.
Okay.
You know, you were seeing the bear come out there. Okay. I'm not joking. Professionals going flag the head pin. Professionals throwing gutters playing the fifth arrow. I mean, listen, you throw a gutter playing the fifth arrow as a professional, the clown's coming out, son. That should pull you right off.
So what other situations should the clown come out if you're bowling a professional event? When should the bowl, what other situations should the clown come out and pull you off the lanes?
Flag the head. Gutter from the fourth arrow in. Go ahead.
If you hook your ball at single pin spares.
Oh yeah.
With your strike ball, you should be the whole tournament should stop and they should pull you off the lane.
Okay.
If you shoot less than 100, CLT in the chat says, if you shoot less than 100 in any doesn't matter, PTQ or main qualifying. They should stop the tournament. As soon as you throw that fill ball and it says 99, they should stop the tournament regardless of what game it is, and the clown should come out and they should pull you off the lanes.
I would say missing the head pin right, then missing the head pin left twice in a game. If you miss the head pin right, if you leave the head pin standing after two shots, twice in a game, clown comes out and you're out. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, but Anthony says, "Oh, stop it!" Because a ton of pros hook at a two pin, eight pin, or three pin. I don't want to hear that. They should all be throwing it straight. I don't care. I'm gonna die on that hill. I don't care how good they are. They should never throw a two pin or eight pin. They should throw it straight.
I would have another one, and it would be if you are playing an extreme angle on the lane. Okay, like if you're playing an extreme angle that no one else is playing, like picture the guy who's standing on lane three but throwing a shot on lane four, okay? Playing an extreme angle, all right? If you're playing an extreme angle and you shoot under 140, tournament should stop. Clowns should come out. Hook you right off the approach, okay? Okay.
So let's talk some other stuff here because there's a few other things I could go into. We could talk
about. They were brutal, though, Rob.
They were brutal.
They were brutal.
So this is Pete Weber's last tournament. Bowling.
No, the Pete Weber opens his last tournament.
Oh, is that what he said? The one in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tournament named after him. So, okay, so this is his last few tournaments bowling the under. There was a big thing that he was on, like, the stream. I didn't see it or listen to it. I'm not sure if you did. But I think he got pretty emotional and whatnot. The one thing I just don't understand in when it comes to bowling itself is, what is the difference? And I'm really asking this question. What is the difference between Pete bowling a PBA 50 US Open or a regular US Open? And I mean by that is, like, he's still bowling. He's not bowling. Like, in a bowling tournament, you're bowling against yourself, right? You know, you get what I'm saying here? Is, like, yes, the competition is crazier, better in the national tour, but the way he bowled at the U.S. Open this time around, he would have been just as low bowling a PBA 50 U.S. Open if he bowled that bad. So to me, like, he just bowled bad. Like,
is
so what
the,
is
the is the senior U.S. Open that many games though?
That is a fair point. I don't know.
It's probably less games.
It's a lot of games.
But I'd imagine it's less games than what this is. And I would imagine,
like, I just don't. Yeah, I get, like, he had a bad tournament and he probably was frustrated and discouraged about it. And he just kind of was just like, I can't compete with these young kids. But I think for me, it's like, yeah, like, I still think that he's bowling against himself. Like, he shouldn't really, really concentrate on what everybody else is doing in a weird way. And he should just bowl how he knows how to bowl. And this guy we're talking is one of the greatest of all time, right? He's one of the. He's on the Mount Rushmore of bowling professionals. The guy's won in every decade since the 70s.
Yeah, and at the same time, I'd be shocked if the senior U.S. Open patterns are as hard as what they're bowling on out here.
So do you think that's part of it? Is that they're just like they got to, like, he just can't physically do what he normally could do because the patterns are just harder? I mean, I'm realistically asking.
Yeah, the guy's old. The guy's older. I mean,
of course he's older.
Father Time is undefeated. Like, what do you expect to happen? You know, and the game gets harder and harder to play in terms of what you have to do to be successful out there, right? And I don't know. I mean, I don't think that any of us know what it's like to be Pete Weber. So I can only you know, speculate, but. It's got to be hard for a guy like that to go out and not be anywhere close to competitive.
That's it.
Like that, I don't care what the situation is. That's got to bother him to some degree.
Has to. Pain, misery, depression. It's probably what he was experiencing after those 24 games of qualifying. There is lots of miles on Pete Jarrett. I agree in the chat. He does have. I'm just saying. Look, like he deserves and earned anything that any decision he makes. I still feel that he should get an exemption anytime he wants it to bowl, but I don't think he wants to even do it at this point, right? So,
well, they should really use the event as an opportunity to honor Pete at some point. I mean,
I agree.
They will. He won it five times, and you know, I feel like even if he's not bowling, it's definitely an event that, like, he should be present for, and it's an event that I feel like he should be in the crowd for. And I feel like it's an event that they should use to kind of recognize him historically in terms of his accomplishments in that event. But yeah, in terms of the bowling, I agree with Jimmy. I think that, you know, he was bowling on a pair where it was just him and Arturo. And I got to be honest, I think that Pete was only sticking it out because it would have been Arturo bowling by himself. You know, so it definitely didn't look real fun for him out there. But you know, with that said, I think that Pete should, you know, give some serious thought to going the same way that Norm Duke has gone. you know, where he's not bowling anymore, but he's still around the game and he's still active and he's still making appearances and doing commentary and these various things. I think there's a ton of opportunities for Pete Weber there in those avenues and those arenas. But yeah, okay. You know, it's sad.
It's sad
to see these guys not bowl anymore, because these were, you know, these were the guys that we idolized growing up.
Yeah. I wasn't critiquing Pete by any means. I mean, he's earned the right to do any decision he wants to. And the more I think about it and the more points that are being made, it's understandable why he wouldn't want to bowl anymore. It is a lot of games. He has put a lot of wear and tear and traveling and whatnot. And you don't want to go and bowl these tournaments and then finish as low as you do, especially when you've won and you're a top five greatest bowler of all time, or people could even consider him the best of all time, honestly. But all right, Mike, anything else you want to keep moving? You want to get to Worst of the Week?
Let's go. Worst of the Week. I want to get out of here. Let's go. Right, sorry, folks. I'm exhausted. Folks, hear me out. Hear me out, okay? I hope some of you feel me on this, okay? I hope I don't catch backlash on this. And I want to say, shout to all my people. I'm probably not talking to you, okay? So don't take this personally, all right? But I'm giving Worst of the Week this week to the Bowl TV chat.
Oh, shit. Uh-oh. Okay, let's hear it.
Bowl TV chat.
All right.
Let's get our shit together, son.
All right, let's go. What happened?
Okay.
What did they do?
Oh, it's a clown parade of patch pirates over there, Rob.
What do you mean? What do they want? You got to talk here.
We got people. We had a person coming in the chat the other night.
Oh, the chat room about, you're talking about. The chat
in the
room.
Chat.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
In the chat while you're watching,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
We got dudes coming in the chat saying, I average 225 on house. I could average 200 on this. And of course, they got a Motive logo as their avatar. Of course. Okay. We got people in the chat just going off the rails. We had people in the chat talking about Philly cheesesteaks, trying to tell me about Philly cheesesteaks. Bowl TV chat, do you know who your boy is?
That's Big Mike from Philly. There's nobody who doesn't know.
You're trying to tell me? Please. This is out of line. Okay? And there's just a lot of nonsense going on in the Bowl TV chat, you know. Just a lot of nonsense. We got to clean it up. So if you're a Sweep the Rack person and you're in that Bowl TV chat, okay? When you see somebody stepping out of line, let's try and keep things on the up and up in there. Okay. We got to help out Flanagan and our guys over there. We got to keep things in line a little bit. So take this as a warning, Bowl TV chat. Worst of the week. Especially the 225 house guy who said he'd average 200. Dope. I mean, please.
I love that chat. I like reading a lot of the stuff that goes on there. Okay, my worst of the week. My worst of the week is going to the USBC, okay? Because as we know, I had to withdraw from the Masters last week because of my injury, which is a legit injury. I have two doctors and an MRI that I went through, and I can't bowl. And when it was a $500 entry, okay? When I asked for my refund, they were, you know, responded to me in about 4 days, and they put the refund in, and my refund was $450. And I asked, you know, the gentleman who helped me, like, why am I getting back $450? And they're like, there's a $50, I forgot exactly what the fee was, but it was like a service fee type, you know, answer. Why are bowlers getting fined $50, Mike? When you know there's a waiting list, when I gave them 2 months, right? sorry, 2 months to replace my entry. I would understand if they gave me like a $10 fine as like a processing fee, maybe for like the credit cards that some of like the businesses will charge you, like a $5 fee for a credit card transaction. I get that. $50? Like, are they just like, they're just pocketing my $50. Somewhere out there right now, Chad Murphy is having dinner and laughing it up. And paying for his appetizers and drinks, laughing it up because he got Brooklyn Rob's $50. So next time I see Chad Murphy, I will ask him for my $50 or to buy me dinner, because there's no reason for them to charge any bowler $50. So I get it. $10 transaction fee, processing fee, $15. Stefan says USBC person at the desk. Oh, that's Brooklyn Rob from Soup the Rack. Yeah, hit his ass with the surcharge for lunch. I love his pictures of Brooklyn Hammer. No, but I mean, that's just, I think, but here's the thing is, like, I entered a PBA tournament.
That's a great comment.
Why I certify.
That's a great comment.
I entered this a PBA tournament.
Hashtag, this is why I certify. So I could be charged $50 for a cancellation fee for a tournament that has a 600-person waiting list.
Dude, I entered the PBA regional. I got a full refund for that. They didn't charge me any fees. I got a refund from a TAT. I'm not going to get hit for that either. Why is USBC being different than the other organizations giving refunds for bowlers? I'm not bitching. Look, it's not about the money, Mike. It's the principle. Remember that Friday scene?
It's about the money. You know,
it's not about the money, Smokey. It's the principle of it. You know, that's where I'm at. That's what I'm feeling. The USBC is big worm. Okay. And yeah, they're just taking my money. So that was my worst of the week. Congrats, USBC. You got my $50. I know you guys are all laughing it up there in headquarters.
The $50 is going towards string pins, Steph says in the chat. Charlie, active in the chat tonight. He blames you for Bolero raising the price of fries. They had to buy more tables, so therefore they raised the price of the French fries.
Yeah, they actually people were saying maybe they'll get me a table at Bolero. Lumber, I agree. It's $50. Okay, that's all I'm saying. Like, it's not a huge amount of money, right? But $50 is still, Mike. You know what I could get for $50, Mike? I can get a Patch Pirate, you know, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, all right, Mike, I see Mike yawning. He's ready to fall asleep here. So we're going to wrap it up here.
Final thoughts, Rob.
US Open. Friday,
US Open,
NBA League Saturday.
Yeah, right.
Bowling US Open weekend, so Sunday. Some betting.
How much bankroll I need in my Bet Rivers this weekend, bro?
You're gonna need at least 500.
Oh, 500.
Yeah,
500. Oh man.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm saying 250.
Okay.
I'm saying
I got right now. I got five of my six horses in it. I got three of my four of my horses. Dude, I got Belmo at plus 900. And what dimension is he plus 900? He's the best bowler in the world, Mike, before this tournament started. I shouldn't say the best bowler. He's top three best bowler in the world right now, okay? Got Simo at plus 600. Kyle Troop at plus 2,500. Oh, this is going to be awesome. Hopefully I could cash in on one of them. And maybe Bill can make another run in a major. That's my final thought.
Jeez. I'm trying to log into my Bet Rivers, and it won't let me log in for some reason. But yeah, I have money on several people that are alive as well. Kyle Troop is one. Spencer Robarge is another.
Spencer's got a lot of work to do tomorrow.
Yeah. So, who else do I have? I have Belmo. Yeah. I have Bill. And I believe that's it.
Okay. Well,
so we'll see you guys in the chat for the weekend.
We'll see you guys in the Bowl TV chat. I know I'll be there probably tomorrow evening. Yeah, and then we'll see you guys probably next week, right, Mike? We don't plan on having a show Sunday.
Probably not Sunday. Maybe Monday. Maybe Monday. Maybe.
We'll put out something on social media. Follow us, Brooklyn Rob 11.
I feel like this show is gonna be worthy of a Monday recap. I feel like it's shaping up that way. So yeah, follow us on social media. He's at Brooklyn Rob 11 on X. I'm at the 215. Emails. We had some emails to get to tonight that we didn't get to. Perhaps if we're on Monday, we can touch on those a little bit. But we appreciate the emails. Keep the emails coming. Sweep the Rack at Gmail. Folks, enjoy. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Mark Baker. Don't forget to check out his info as well, markbaker.com.
Mark Baker Bowling.
And guys, have a good weekend and enjoy the show.
Everybody. See ya.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.